Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Are you ready?
Let's clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
He's gone from suck to blow.
What?
You know, Troy, starting this training camp, there were a lot of question marks, and we've talked about a bunch of them. Quarterback question marks, receiver question mark, third receiver, tight end question mark, running back question mark, secondary question mark. I mean, on and on and on it goes. But I think the one that resonated the most with the Bronco fans is the head coach. It was a question mark, and I think that question, to whatever degree you can answer it, it has been answered in this camp. Now, we'll have to see in-game adjustments and how you handle the game, but I will tell you, coming into this training camp, the difference between Vance Joseph last year and this year has been monumental. Watching him last year, he was a guy that was just happy to be here. I'm a head coach. I'm happy to be here. Now he's in charge. And you watch the way he operates his practice. You watch the way he motors around from group to group, coaching guys, putting in his 2 cents, coaching his coaches. It's just been a different guy. And I think one of the things I always talk about when it comes to being a head coach is your ability, not X's and O's, not your ability to understand football or your ability to have a conversation with the players or whatever. It's your ability to command the room. That's the biggest part of being a head coach. Can you stand up in front of your group and sell whatever it is you're selling? Get them to buy into whatever it is you're selling, and then to go out to the practice field and have enough reverence for you and what you've just sold them to go out and to execute those things. And I've seen a massive difference in Vance Joseph last year to this year. So that's one question to me that has been answered early in camp. We're going to have to see how it relates in games, but right now in camp, it looks like Vance Joseph has matured as a head coach, and that's got to be a great sign for the Broncos Saturday night when they get their cleats on the grass.
That was awesome.
Clear the air with Mark Schlereth.
So what have you seen, Troy, in regards to Vance Joseph that gives you, I don't know, that gives you some hope, or is there some things that you still are really concerned about when it comes to Vance as a head coach?
Well, reasons for hope are easy. As you mentioned, he's more demonstrative. He's more assertive in his personality. That's the guy I knew in college. I've known Vance since college. I had classes with him at CU. And I've known him since he was a 19-year-old kid. And he always had a personality that guys gravitated toward. Even though he wasn't the starter, he was for a few games at CU. But he had that type of personality that would bring players to him. So I've seen more of that this year. I think changing the coaching staff helped him tremendously, because you had guys in Eric Studisville, Tyke Tolbert, who frankly probably thought they were more qualified than Vance was to be the head coach. And he gave his assistants too much leash, in my opinion, because he was an assistant. And gave him freedom to coach. Gave him too much freedom. Mm-hmm. And he didn't assert himself when things started to go off the rails. So I see a guy who's more in charge, who realizes that, hey, this might be his last year. If it doesn't go well, so go out being you. Be you. And I've seen more of that this year. My concern would be, what does it look like on Sunday? Because even when there were moments that he looked the part last year, the game got fast on them on Sunday against good teams. Remember that 3-week stretch? Kansas City, New England, Philadelphia, they got out-coached in every way. So that's what I need to see, what it looks like on Sunday with him, with Joe Woods. Are they going to make adjustments? Are they going to be better? But the guy I'm seeing on the practice field has definitely shown progress and growth as a head coach.
What about in front of the media when he addresses the media? Because there were times last year that I just felt like he didn't feel comfortable. And it's interesting because, you know, you look at what went down last year in regards to, you know, how many times he commented on what a great practice it was, and we're practicing great, and the practice has been good, and, you know, the attention to detail has been great, and then you just go out and get shellacked on Sundays, like you mentioned. And I've noticed him basically downplaying the practice stuff. You know, it's only practice, guys. You know, we're going to make mistakes. There's going to be things that we have to correct and all that stuff. But just as far as addressing the media, you're here every day. You stand and listen to his press conferences. You ask him questions. How much different is he in carrying himself in front of the media compared to last year at this time?
He's just more confident, more comfortable. Last year there were times he would hesitate that came across as doubt, and I think it was him just kind of trying to find the right words. I don't think it was an issue of him not feeling comfortable in front of us as much as trying to say the right thing, do the right thing, and now it just looks like it comes more naturally. He is parsing his words more, too, and I'm the last person in the media to say I don't want a guy to talk, but when it comes specifically to the practice issue, he's much smarter about saying, hey, it was one practice. It's no big deal. It's one practice.
Yeah, pump your
brakes. That's smart of him because last year his emphasis on practice allowed fans to then he became a cliche to them. You know, this every time they get smoked on Sunday, it's like, well, looks like they're going to have another great week of practice.
But don't you think that also is part of what happens to you from a player standpoint? Not just that it becomes cliche, you know, from a fan standpoint, but don't you think in the locker room, you're sitting here and you're listening to your coach talk about how great practice was and practice this, and you guys are getting, you know, you guys are getting pounded on Sundays. Don't you think you start to look at your coach going, dude, man, maybe he doesn't know what a good practice is. Maybe, you know, like, doesn't that lend itself to lessening your credibility as a head coach?
Yeah, if you know your coach is covering for you in the media, like Bobby Cox used to with the Braves. You know, he'd cover for his pitchers that have a bad day. You know, oh, the mound was off, or, you know, the ump was squeezing him. He'd come up with any cover for his players. So if a player, you see that's one thing. But if it's, he keeps saying we're doing well, and it's not even beginning to translate on Sunday, it can undermine your credibility. I don't think guys saw it that way. They saw it just as a kind of a default response. They weren't seeing it. Like, I wasn't having guys pulling me aside last year going, does he really think we're practicing well? It wasn't that. It was more on Sunday, they were so reactionary of, you know, everything. The opponents were dictating everything to them all the time. Uh-huh. And that was the concern what I'd get from players is we feel like we're constantly chasing ghosts. We prepared for one thing, and if it goes even the second off script, it was, you know, oh my, what do we do now? And that's what we got to see now. With he's more prepared, more assertive, can that allow him to coach faster on game day?
I don't want you to tell stories out of tell things that you're not supposed to, you know, they're supposed to reveal to us here, but like criticisms from the players. You talk to players all the time. Was there a criticism of Vance? Was there something that said this is something he's got to be better at?
Well, it was specifically over the offense and why they were running the three wide set. Why they continued to, you know, why Jamal Charles never saw the playing field. Why, just the main questions were centered around number one offense initially. Like, why are we running this scheme when it doesn't suit us? I mean, guys would be like, why aren't we kind of more of a running team? Mm-hmm. Like, that came up a lot. The special teams thing across the board hurt Vance because guys, with all due respect to Isaiah McKenzie, could not understand why he continued to get chances.
Right.
They just could not understand it. I mean, they would literally be like, why are we using this guy? And it was not personal. You know that.
Yeah.
It's business. That one hurt him because it was like, is he believing Olivo or does he really think this kid's turning the corner? That one, as much as anything, was a difficult one for the locker room to understand. And that's why I like the Vance Joseph I've seen this year. He's making young guys earn it. The first depth chart will be released here more closer to 9 o'clock. But he's making guys come in and win jobs, not, oh, he had a good practice. He's on the team, like he did with McKenzie last year. I do think Vance has learned from his mistakes.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we're going to find out because he's going to mention, we're going to hear from Vance Joseph about this offense and what he thinks the difference is and how he thinks his offense is progressing. We'll do that next.
Mark Schlereth here. When you're looking to replace your windows, you want the best. That's why I endorse Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. They sell Infinity from Marvin fiberglass windows. You can't buy Infinity windows from big box stores, so you know they never compromise on quality. Infinity fiberglass windows offer unparalleled value, energy efficiency, and durability. So call my friends at Gravina's Window Center of Littleton, 303-794-0490, or find them online at windowsforyourhome.com, and make sure you tell them Stink sent you.
Hey, welcome back in. Schlereth and Evans, Mark Schlereth, Troy Rank with you. UC Health Training Center is practice about to kick off here for the Broncos at 9:30. Troy and I right outside here of UC Health Training Centers. We're looking onto the field and an absolutely beautiful morning. And, you know, this offense is something we've been talking a lot about. We talked about VJ and kind of the advancement of him from a coaching standpoint, the differences that we've seen from VJ, and that's encouraging. But is he encouraged by this offense? This is what he had to say about the progress of this offense.
I feel good about it. You know, offensively, you know, we are better, in my opinion. You know, we're more efficient, I should say. You know, having Case, he finds completions. You know, and that keeps drives alive. You know, I think offensive line-wise, at this point, you know, we've got five guys that we like, you know, as a group, and those guys have played together, you know, for the whole camp so far. So that's also important. But, again, we have work to do, but I'm pleased at this moment, you know, where we are.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see exactly what they look like if they get that series, that first series, on Saturday night. But I tend to look at that. That's not hyperbole. Like, there is some excitement here in camp. It was funny during the scrimmage, you know, sitting with John or standing with John Elway, talking about the depth of this offense, talking about the personnel, talking about the advancements they made. There's a big difference, Troy, when you're just kind of eyeball testing this from just a pure talent standpoint. Obviously the receivers, as, you know, as they were constructed last year versus this year, it's night and day, the difference between, you know, after Demaryius and after Emmanuel, the guys that come in, there's a huge difference from last year to this year, from just a pure talent standpoint, also a football kind of acumen standpoint, an understanding standpoint. Tight end, there's some athleticism, there's some ability there. Understand they're young, but like there's a big difference here, and there's reason for optimism for this offense.
Well, it starts at receiver because Courtland Sutton is a huge upgrade over anything they had at number three last year. You know, whether like essentially it was Vinny Fowler was their true number three. I mean, Courtland Sutton has a chance to be a star in this league, and he's been mentioned in the same breath as DeAndre Hopkins as a rookie.
Uh-huh.
I mean, Hopkins had 802 yards as a rookie with like 52 catches. I mean, if Sutton had 45 and 600, oh my, would they take that? Deshaun Hamilton, I've said, the guy runs better routes, takes better routes than Google Maps. He's efficient. He understands things. He's smart. I love the way he plays. And then you throw in the fact that they have a quarterback. But the one question for me remains, and the depth chart again will be released right around 9 a.m. this morning before practice. They'll have a team meeting and then come out here for practice. But where does it sit with running back? Because they do need to figure out who that is. And I'm not as big a fan on the committee thing. I think they need to at least keep it down to two guys at some point, because trying to rotate through it. Now, you could rotate three in if, like, Philip Lindsay's just a receiving type back, or Booker becomes a complementary piece. But they need to have a guy who they can trust to run the football. And the idea we're going to have three, four guys, I don't like the sound of that. I want one or two guys who are running the football. But offensively, Chris Harris told me they're going to score 30 points a game a couple days ago. And I'm like, Chris, you know they scored 18.1 last year. He's like, they're going to double that. And it was hyperbole a little bit. But if they can get to 22, 23 points a game, Mark, they're a playoff team. I mean, 21 is usually the mark that gets you to 500. You get past 21 points a game, you're typically in the playoffs. 22, 23 points, you're a playoff team. And they were at 18 last year, and the worst team in the red zone in the NFL. So they can only improve, frankly. They can only improve.
Talking, you know, it's funny because you look at the talent level, and you look at it's so much more than talent. When you put a team together, it's so much more than just we have a talented player here. There's so much of it has to do with your football kind of quote-unquote character. What we always talk about is football character, and I'm not talking about choir boy type of character. I'm talking about guys who understand the game, guys who can see the kind of whole picture of the game. And guys that are going to go out here and compete and try to fight for a job, and guys who aren't entitled, and a big difference on this football team, just from a pure talent standpoint and a football understanding or a football character. And it was funny, I was talking to Matt Russell just the other day about, you know, going through the draft process and how they were like, hey, listen, we understand the choir boy aspect of it, and I'm paraphrasing here, but we're not worried. Hey, a guy gets in a fight as a freshman in a bar. You know, I mean, those things happen, right, Troy? Doesn't mean you're a bad dude. It just is the way it goes with guys in college, and, you know, you throw a few beers down the gullet, and those things happen on occasion, right? That's not taking you off. It's the guys on the board when they said, hey, this guy doesn't have great football understanding, or this guy doesn't have a great football kind of knowledge, this guy doesn't have great football, quote-unquote, character. And was telling me how they basically went through their board, and they just eliminated those guys. Like, this guy isn't a great – he's not a great football player. Like, he's a really good athlete, but not a great football player. We're eliminating him. And how clear the draft board became. And now, Matt would be the first guy to tell you, hey, was there some luck involved? Yeah, there's some luck involved. You know, Bradley Chubb dropped to us. Like, we weren't expecting that. But when it did, you know, we had done our due diligence. We knew what that guy was. And so we took him. But the bottom line is, it really cleared up philosophically, and we've speculated this before, but that to me is confirmation that this was a different process than it's been in the past. And it's something that you, like, it jumps off. Like, this year compared to last year, just the talent on the football field, this talent and this football team is significantly better than last year at this time. Significantly.
Well, and again, the football IQ is remarkably better.
Right.
You know, I mean, they took, I mean, in defense of some of the guys last year, they took some projects. Brendan Langley played, he was a two-way player at Lamar, even his final year of college.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea he was going to come in and play cornerback in the NFL when he was playing receiver half the time in college, mm-hmm. even as his last year of college, then, I mean, let's be honest, let's be realistic here. Garrett Bowles had played football, what, 3 years, Mark?
Yeah.
3.5 years? Carlos Henderson had, you know, he's had issues off the field. I don't think he's coming back, and if he is, he's going to get cut or placed on some kind of restricted list. But he was a guy, clearly, that struggled with the football IQ part of it, was lost in training camp last year,
right.
Completely lost. Isaiah McKenzie was a guy who wasn't humbled by the process, and he fought back and, you know, pushed back, and instead now he's been humbled, way more coachable. But you're right. They identified the type of players they wanted in this year's draft class. Good players who had a lot of experience, the Josie Jewels type, the Cortland Suttons, who've been on the field and been captains. And so when they get here, it's much easier to microwave development for guys who get the football part and can grasp it more quickly. Because you can't take a guy who doesn't understand football and make him understand a pro football playbook overnight. It just doesn't happen.
Right.
If you take guys who are already smart, have acumen and keep spoon feeding them, they can get it. And I couldn't be more impressed with this rookie class, because I think 4 to 5 guys are going to contribute. Last year they had one guy contribute in a meaningful way, and that was Bowles, and even his year was inconsistent. This year you're going to see Chubb contribute, you're going to see Cortland Sutton contribute, you're going to see Deshaun Hamilton contribute, possibly even Josie Jewell and Isaac Yiadom.
Yeah.
Contribute on in the defense and some packages.
On top of that, you're going to get Jake Butt's going to be a contributor. You may get, you know, you may get a contribution after Troy Fumagalli, the tight end they took out of Wisconsin. So, you know, this could be one of those situations, and we've talked about this in reference to a bunch, and I was just out at New Orleans Saints camp, how their rookie class and how their young guys really stepped up and played exceptionally well, and that went from a 7-9 season the year before, or 3 straight years before, to 11-5 playoff appearance, losing in the divisional round to Case Keenum and the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, Vance Joseph is right to say, you can see it. It's not hyperbole when Vance goes, this offense is a heck of a lot better, because you can see it. Even an untrained eye can see how much better this offensive personnel is and how much better they're operated under Case Keenum than last year. Hey, does a squeaky wheel always get the oil? You'll find out next in 4 Down Territory.
Be quiet. I'm answering the question.
This is 4 Down Territory.
Let's talk football.
Personal foul, 69. Offense. He was giving them the business.
That guy's pretty good. If you like 6'5", 230-pound quarterbacks, laser, rocket arms.
It's my quarterback. And if you guys do that, man, it's unfair.
On Sports Radio 104.3, The Fan.
Chicken parm tastes so good.
Ready, bread. First down.
Diagnosing the defense is Rivers. Changing the play. Puts his hands to the helmet. 1 second. Snap. Looking right. Still looking right. Going to the back of the end zone. Keenan Allen. Catch. Touchdown. Knock on wood.
That's obviously Chargers radio right there. Phillip Rivers not contemplating retirement, or at least hasn't really thought about it. 37 years old. He is the, you know, Phillip Rivers is one of those guys that that you love to hate. You know who he reminds me of? Because he always got the little bolo tie and like the checker. He reminds me of Woody of Toy Story. Like, when I watch him, I'm like, I just expect him to yell out, "There was a snake in my boot," and he's traveling around, you know, and trying to. But he is one of those guys, as a Bronco fan, you love to hate. He's one of those guys that's great for the league. And I'm actually excited that retirement isn't anytime soon in his plans, Troy.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy who's a heel. He's a professional heel.
Mm-hmm.
And he would go right from here to WWE. But he plays with the crowd. He gets opponents angry. But it's the oddest thing because he doesn't curse. So he gets you riled up, but he never says anything offensive. And guys tell me, like, they struggle to curse back at him because they feel guilty because he's not cursing. He gets in your head in every way. We'll see, though, because how many great years does he have left? He was really good last year.
Yeah, he was.
Better than I expected, and they're the favorite. They are the favorite right now for me in the AFC West.
They are, and it'll be interesting to see how they respond to that. I think defensively they're a really good football team. It'll be interesting to watch them play next in 4-down territory.
Second down.
You ever come in with your boy Five?
He does his own little workouts in the mornings.
Where's your own little workout in the morning?
Huh?
Where's your own little workout in the morning? You start starting your career how you want to. You see what I'm saying? It's a competition in everything you do, baby. You know how to do it.
I think that's Baker Mayfield. I'm assuming that's Hugh Jackson, the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, talking about, that's one thing about rookies, you know, this sense of entitlement. They roll in here like they don't have to compete. Everything's a competition. I've always said this, Troy. I always, just in competition in general, there's always a game going on, and if you don't know what the game is, you're probably it. Like, I don't care if we're washing dishes. I want to be better at that than you. I don't care what it is. There's always a competition going on. And, you know, when Vance Joseph came out a week ago and said, "Well, we're not grading this," my butt, you're not grading it. You grade everything. There's always that competition going on just from who's out on the field first? Who's the first guy out on the field? Like, everybody's looking at that stuff. Like, Baker Mayfield, you come out and you complete 71% of your passes in college. Who gives a rip? Are you showing up before number five? You showing up before Tyrod Taylor? Well, he does a workout in the morning. Yeah, well, where's your workout in the morning? Like, these are things that rookies oftentimes don't understand, that as a veteran player, you just look at it and you shake your head and go, you know, kid's not ready yet. And you want to talk about how that relates to the Denver Broncos? Well, Paxton Lynch, Exhibit A. Like, have you ever been first out to practice one time? I can answer that. Nope. You haven't.
Well, young guys, again, they don't appreciate that it's a business sometimes. And I think Mayfield will figure it out because he is ultra competitive. You can say a lot of things about Baker, but one thing he is really competitive. Mm-hmm. So I would expect him to figure it out quickly. I wonder with Baker, though, because Hugh Jackson has been so adamant about the fact that Baker's not going to start. He is absolutely not going to start. And because of that, you wonder if Baker's doing a different type of routine. But as Hugh Jackson's telling him right there on Hard Knocks, dude, if he's working out, you're working out. You know, wherever he is, you are. And, you know, that is good advice as long as the guy you're following is legit. So we'll see. We'll see. But I don't sense Baker starting. And that actually protects him, frankly.
Right.
Let Tyrod Taylor go for the first half of the season, and then, or at least the first four games.
Yeah, see how it pans out. See what goes on next in 4-down territory.
Third down.
My life's just different. I'm just happy. Honestly, for real, I'm just happy to be back out there running around. And like I said before, I don't believe in any of that stuff. I feel like they'll get it done when they get it done. It'll happen when it happens.
That's OBJ for the New York Giants. Reports that they're trying to make him the highest paid wide receiver in football. And there's no question. You know, we've talked a lot on this show about football maturity and football intelligence. There's no question the guy is one of the most gifted players in the National Football League. The problem has been his lack of emotional maturity, his lack of leadership in that regard. Could you imagine how good that guy could be if he put it all together? If he had the mentality of a Jerry Rice and the talent that he has, the guy would be virtually unstoppable.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're talking, exactly. I mean, it is, we'll see. When does the light bulb go on for some of these guys?
Right. Because one thing, you know, I do a lot of work at Fox, as you know, and some of the time during the course of the season, I'm in New York on First Things First with Nick Wright and Chris Carter. And so Chris Carter, you know, Chris Carter, I've never been around an athlete that's more connected than Chris Carter. Like, every player's number, I've got great connections. My connections pale in comparison to Chris Carter's. And you'll be on set and you're talking, he's talking with OBJ. You know, they're texting back and forth. They're talking back and forth. And the issue that you get with that kid is that he understands, you know, the difference between right and wrong. He gets that some of the things he does are, you know, a deterrent to the team, but he gets in the moment and he doesn't have the maturity in the moment to say, wait a minute, this is a bad decision.
He gets so emotional.
Right.
I compared him to Kanye West. He's like the Kanye West of receivers. The most talented, a little misunderstood, a little eccentric, and you love it, but there's times it's awkward. I'll say this, though. If the Giants think they're going to get him less than what the Chiefs paid Sammy Watkins, they are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sammy Watkins is dramatically overpaid, but what I saw last night, Mark, was the Giants were giving him an offer that was under below what Sammy Watkins got.
Yeah, that part is really dumb. Next on Four Down Territory.
Fourth down.
I've had a little bit of dialogue with Aaron, and you know, we're hopeful that we'll get something done, but I don't think I don't think there's any real, you know, realistic deal to kind of that August 7th being a date that changes really anything. But you never know, and you know, things remain the same. I'm looking forward to trying to connect with him later on today, and you know, kind of we'll see where we're at.
Aaron Donald, to me, the best football player in the National Football League, doesn't have a deal yet. And you know, we've talked about this a bunch, about just, you look at the Rams and on paper how good the Rams look, and yet you've got this hanging over your head where you've gone out and you've fortified your roster with people that were outside of your core, people that were outside of your organization, Aqib Talib, Marcus Peters, guys that have kind of a mercurial nature at times, a guy like Ndamukong Suh, another guy, and you've decided to pay all those guys, and yet one of your homegrown guys who happens to be the best player in the National Football League, in my opinion, you don't have a deal for, boy, in a locker room, that doesn't sit well. And it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out, because I always said the thing that will derail the Rams is
Ego, jealousy,
you know, like that inner strife that can happen with a football team when you're not getting yours, and especially the way they feel about Aaron Donald in that locker room, how good he is and what a great guy he is. There will be guys that will look at that and say, man, if you're not going to pay him, then when my deal's up, there's no chance I'm going to get my money.
Nothing upsets guys more in the locker room, because guys don't want to talk about another guy's money. It's kind of, you know,
right.
Hey, your business is your business. We don't talk money. But what does really, I've seen agitate players in a locker room, is when you bring in a guy, you pay guys from the outside.
Right.
Like Brandon Cooks, they have no problem throwing money at him.
Right.
Yet you don't pay Donald. And I get there's reasons and the puzzle pieces fit differently, but it is upsetting in a locker room when you only pay free agents and you never pay the guys from within. And that's why the Broncos, when they were doing great over those years, they were getting Chris Harris done, they were getting Derek Wolfe done, they were getting, you know, Darian Stewart done, along with getting Talib, Sanders, DeMarcus Ware. But if you're only paying free agents, what message does that send to the guys inside the walls who are putting the time in?
Right,
like,
exactly.
What the heck? Where's my money?
Yeah. And the issue is, you know, we talk about the business of it. The players in the locker room don't care how your cap functions. They don't care, right, like where you have money funded from where. And like, they just look at it like you paid that free agent. You paid $14 million for one season for Ndamukong Suh. Where's Aaron Donald's money? Because he's better. And that's the way they look at it. Like, I don't care where you get the money from. You can find a way to get the money. You know, they always use the money excuse, you know, well, it's a cap, and boy, you can renegotiate a bunch of contracts. You can find the money. You need to find the money for Aaron Donald. You need to make him, in my mind, you need to make him the highest paid defensive player in football. That's what needs to happen. And that's it for Four Down Territory. Season kicks off on Saturday for the Broncos, the first preseason game against the Minnesota Vikings. What does Troy Rank need to see from this team to kind of ease and calm his nerves? We'll talk about that next. Live from UC Health Training Center here, the Broncos about ready to set off practice about 9:30. If you're coming down here, beautiful day, sunny, gorgeous, and I'm telling you what, Going to be a great practice today. 9:30 is when they kick off here at UC Health Training Center. You've got Mark Schlereth alongside Troy Rank. You're going to have a special guest at 8:05. You got to make sure you stay tuned for that special guest. Going to join the program. You're not going to want to miss it. And a lot of you are going to feel really bad, which makes me feel good. There's a lot of you that are going to feel bad, and that makes me feel really, really good. So, Troy, we mentioned this, you know, as practice is set to kick off here at about 9:30 and about, I don't know, a little over an hour and a half away. This Broncos football team and what you're going to need to see out of them on Saturday. And I understand the starters aren't going to play a whole lot, and there's probably going to be some guys that may not, you know, play. And I would just assume, you know, some of the, like, or the Ronald Leary, who we've seen them kind of manage, and maybe a Valdir, who we've seen them kind of manage. Maybe a few of those guys don't get to play a whole lot. Maybe they don't play at all. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe a Von Miller is in street clothes for the game. You know, the guys they want to protect, and I get them doing that. But what is it that you're looking forward to? What is it that you need to see from this football team to kind of put your mind at ease that this is a team that's going to be quite a bit different than the one we saw last year go 5-11.
Need to see a functioning offense, Mark. An offense that plays with confidence, that moves the chains, keeps down and distance manageable, protects the quarterback. I want to see things protected through scheme. I want to see different pass blocking. I just want to see an offense that looks like it can put up points and compete. I mean, last year, again, out here, it was JV versus varsity when it came to offense versus defense. And early in the season, the Broncos had a couple nice games, and they had that really good game against the Cowboys. Then teams figured out how to defense them and be like, hey, we're going to go after them. We're going to blitz more. We're going to force them to beat us with the pass. We don't believe they can run consistently. And it went off the rails, as we all know. But what I want to see is what I've seen out here. Case Keenum moving the chains. When he doesn't have a play, throw it away. He said, and I appreciate this, you know, he wants every drive to end in a kick, whether it's an extra point, field goal, or a punt. And if you're able to protect the ball and make teams go the length of the field against this defense, you're going to see more takeaways. I mean, do you realize Broncos were they had 17 takeaways last year? That was 26th in football. Their poor offense infected everything. Mm-hmm. And Keenum's confidence has then been the exact opposite this year. He has just been, as I said, this human Febreze. From the stench of last season, Keenum has given them this confidence, this little bit of their swag back. So what do I want to see? I want to see an efficient passing game and a game with Musgrave where he uses scheme to emphasize the strength of his personnel.
I heard John Lynch say this years and years ago, and it's always resonated with me. And you know, as I do with my partner Mike Evans, I steal it, make it my own intellectual property, right? But John Lynch said this, and this is over a decade ago probably. The preseason games, they don't count, but they do matter. It matters, right? It does. The way you establish yourself. And one of the things about our teams back in the 90s is even if we were in for a series, we wanted to go cram it down your throat in that one series. And the importance of this for me is, I always felt like we had a chance to wind up in a Super Bowl. And you're playing a game against a team against the Minnesota Vikings. Like, we may meet you, and if we do, it's going to be for a world championship. And I just want you to remember, in the first preseason game or the fourth preseason game, we rolled out as an offense, and we thunder punched you right in the teeth. Right? Just remember that. And so it was always important to me to establish yourself that way, establish yourself as a physically dominant football team, establish yourself as a team that's going to convert on third down, and establish yourself as a team that's going to punch it in the end zone when you get a chance. And those things to me are really important, and this is the tone that you need to set. So if I'm playing here, and it's easy to say this because I'm sitting here, but if you're playing here and you are in, then – like, if the coaches don't say, hey, you're a healthy scratch and we're just protecting you and it's different than it was in my day because we all played in my day. Nowadays, they don't. But if we get in, guys, it is imperative as an offense that we send a message to the rest of the league, that we send a message to ourselves from a confidence standpoint to ourselves and to our defense. We're not going to let you down this year, guys. Like, we're going to be competitive. We're going to give you a chance to where you don't have to gamble on every play, where you don't have to make every play, where you don't have to have a pick six and a strip stack fumble. And, you know, you don't have to do that every game because we're going to take that pressure off of you. And I believe that the guys on this defense, they need to know that, right? I think they feel it right now, but it'd be nice for them to kind of go, oh, we don't have to make every play. We can just do our jobs, not more than our jobs. And I think that's a tone that you need to set here early in the preseason.
Yeah, don't talk about it. Be about it. Show me. Again, that's been the theme of this whole camp. Show me. And we've seen encouraging signs in practice. But that's all it is practice. The next layer of that is to go out against a new opponent and look efficient and give that defense a reason to say, as you said, a sense of relief that, hey, we can go out and be a normal defense and not have to play, you know, the short field all the time, not have to take crazy chances, not have to feel like we have to score a touchdown to win a game, you know. And I think that all goes back to Keenum, number one, Musgrave in the system they're going to run, number two. And let's be honest, Mark, they have better players this year.
Yes.
Courtland Sutton, Deshaun Hamilton. You know, with all due respect to the guys who are here, that's a huge upgrade on the outside and even at the slot. And Emmanuel Sanders working in the slot and base personnel. They're more versatile. They're more talented. Mm-hmm. Sanders has had the best camp, I think, in his career. If not his career, certainly since he's been a Bronco. I mean, he is playing with, you know, he's got lightning in his feet right now. He is playing like I haven't seen since his first year here with Manning. And Courtland Sutton, every day he makes a catch that you're just like, what the heck? How did he do that? So the talent's there, but now let's see it. Let's see it. Even if it's for a series, that first team offense. I agree with you completely. You need to go out there and be efficient as the first team offense. A three and out, it would be, oh, it's just preseason, but that would send to the wrong tone based on how camp's gone.
It absolutely would. We're live at Training Camp 2018, presented by Matthews Fine Watches and Jewelry and Epic Mountain Gear. Now, as far as the depth charts can be released, you mentioned this, around 9. When we go off there, they're going to release the depth chart. When you get that as a media member, do you put a lot of merit into it? Do you try to kind of figure out what they're thinking? I mean, what is the benefit of the depth chart? And if you're the Broncos, what do you think? I'm asking you to speculate here at the running back position, because this is the one place to me that's really intriguing. What are you expecting from the depth chart of the running back position? Will they do that? Will they pull an Adam Gase? I don't know if you saw this in Miami. Adam Gase, former offensive coordinator here, put dual running backs. I think he put Kenyon Drake. And the starting running back was Kenyon Drake, or it's
Frank Gore.
So, and he said, I just did that to mess with you guys, essentially, using an expletive. But how do you think this running back position is going to pan out as far as the depth chart is concerned?
If I had to guess, it'll open with Devontae Booker listed as the starter. And you take, I'm going to say not with a grain of salt, but that could change. It's a fluid situation, but because of his experience and they haven't had a game yet, I would expect it to be, again, this is me completely speculating, that it would be Devontae Booker, Royce Freeman, D'Angelo Henderson, then Lindsey and Williams, Philip Lindsey, David Williams. And again, that's subject to change. I'm curious, though, what does it look like in a game? Because it's one thing when it's there on a depth chart, is that going to be followed in the game? There's not a lot of mystery over any starters here, Mark. I mean, Connor McGovern, by all intents and purposes, has won the right guard job. He's not being challenged by Max Garcia. Garcia's filling in some at left side with Ron Leary. They're easing him back after the knee issue. So there's no issue on the offensive line. On starters, will they list Courtland Sutton as kind of the number three receiver? Yes. Who will be the starting tight end? That one's of interest to me because Heuerman's been out for several days. I would expect it'll probably be Austin Traylor listed at one, but that may not mean anything. I mean, honestly, if it were me, I would list Jake Butt as number one, but maybe they're going to wait till after a game. So tight end, I'm curious to how do they list that on the depth chart. And, again, what they say today may not be the case in 2 weeks, clearly, or 3 weeks. And cornerback, who is the nickel guy? Will Isaac Yiadom be listed as the number one?
Yeah.
I mean, my guess is they'll list Tremaine Brock as the nickel, but he's not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So will Yiadom be listed in front of Brendan Langley? My guess is yes there, which,
right.
Again, some of those guys from the draft class from last year, they are on notice, not only for playing time, but in some cases to make the team. They're on notice.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's any question they are. And as far as the depth chart is concerned, I mean, depth charts, as you know, are very fluid depending upon how you play. One of the things I love about just competing in professional sports, it really does become a, at some point, it's always a what have you done for me? What can you do for me? It's the ultimate meritocracy in that if you can play, it doesn't matter where you come from. And I think, you know, we're probably going to see that here sooner rather than later in regards to Paxton Lynch. If he doesn't come out and shine, and I mean shine in a real offense, I think one of the things that concerned me the other day was when Chris Harris Jr. talked about the difference between the number one offense and the number two offense, that they're completely different. And what that would tell you is that...
That was an indictment.
Yeah, that Paxton Lynch can't play in a pro-style offense, so you've got to do something, you've got to do something entirely different. And here's why, if you run a traditional or more traditional style of offense, here's why these spread college quarterbacks don't fit. Because do I need to teach 10 other guys a completely different offense just to get this guy to be functional in my offense? For the Broncos, if we did lose our starting quarterback for any length of time, do we have to have a completely different offense for our number two guy to come in here and at least be able to efficiently run? And frankly, you mean, think about the time. You have limited time, practice time, and all that stuff anyhow. Now all of a sudden I have all that limited time and I have to have a different offense for my number two guy to be able to execute with any efficiency at all. Like, why would you want to put yourself through that? And I think there's a lot of teams that just aren't interested in doing that. So you sit there and say, well, where could a Paxton Lynch go? Where would he fit? Who runs something like that? You know, there's a lot of teams that don't want to, you know, they don't want to play that game. They don't want to have two separate offenses because you just don't have the time to, you know, to coach all that stuff up.
Well, it makes it difficult because, like you said, it's not, if it was just two offenses for those specific positions, it'd be one thing, but you're asking the offense to change around a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And basically 10 to change for one instead of one changing for the other 10.
Right.
That becomes problematic when you're trying to be a productive offense. And again, I don't think Chris meant it that way necessarily, but the candor is appreciated that when Case is out there and that first team, they're on level 10, like comparing it to a video game. And the other, you know, when the second team is out there, he didn't mention them by name, but it was when the first team isn't out there, it's definitely a much lower level. So Paxton Lynch needs to play well. The time for him to – there's no more excuses at this point. I get it that it's a preseason game, but he needs to go out and show signs of progress. Because if he doesn't, they really have to think long and hard about bringing in a T.J. Yates or a Matt Moore or somebody to protect them if Keenum gets injured. And I haven't seen it, and I hope he proves me wrong. I'm not rooting against the guy, but he's got to show it. You can't just talk it into existence and keep saying, oh, he's good, he's good, he's good, because he's a first-round guy. We have to see it now, Mark. Now, year three, we got to see it.
We certainly do, and it'll be interesting because I think there was, maybe it's a Freudian slip, but when he says the two offenses are entirely different, that tells me that what you're seeing out there is an offense that is the offense they want to run, and then there's an offense for your backup quarterback who hasn't grasped the offense that you've put in. That's what that says to me, and it may have been accidental. But I think it's, you know, I think there's a lot of truth to it. Okay, a couple things coming up. We've got question Mark or question Troy. You want to get a hold of us? You certainly can do that. The RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043 is that number. If you want to get a hold of us there, you've got a question for Troy, a question for me, please don't hesitate to get us there. Also, a special guest coming up at 8:05, and it's going to make most of you kind of feel like a turd. That's next.